This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
In an economy where success is all about whether people are buying stuff, the last thing you want to hear is that those buyers aren't feeling very well, that they're just going to stay home with a box of Kleenex and some soup. It's also known as a lack of consumer confidence, and it is afflicting the American public. But what exactly is making them want to crawl under the covers? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for joining us on this Tuesday. It is the 30th day of August. Here in Hollywood, folks like to say perception is reality. Well, let's hope it isn't. Today, the Conference Board reported that consumer confidence in this country has fallen to a two-year low. And when consumers are less confident, they tend to spend less, which is the opposite of what the economy needs right now. Here's the interesting thing. Our actual situation hasn't changed much over the last few months. But perhaps thanks to the wild stock market and political gridlock, our perceptions have. And that is creating a new reality. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith has more from New York.
Delphin Faye McIntyre lives in Charlotte, North Carolina. Her husband lost his job back in 2008, and it took him more than a year to find a new one. They're both working, and their financial situation is solid now, but they're still not buying like they used to. No more new clothes, dinners, or vacations.
We used to rent a home on the beach and invite our whole family. We would go down to the Caribbean.
These days, when McIntyre and her husband spend, it's on maintenance, not Mai Tais.
Say, well, we need a new roof, or we need to replace our air conditioning unit. We're going to spend money on things we know we're going to need at some point anyway.
U.S. consumers are battening down the hatches. In many cases, it's not that they are any worse off than they were a year ago. It's that they think the U.S. economy is, says economist Lynn Franco with the Conference Board.
We think, you know, a contributing factor here has been sort of the debt ceiling discussions and the lack of confidence in leadership.
That, coupled with an unemployment rate that won't budge, has consumers spooked. And spooked consumers cut back on purchases small and big. Data out today shows home prices keep falling. Add to that people charging less on their credit cards. Silvio Tavares tracks consumer spending for First Data.
Certainly for the first part of this year, we did have pretty significant growth in consumer spending. That is starting to slow somewhat.
Tavares says the key to consumer confidence is jobs. And until there are more of those, consumers are going to keep on spending like it's 2008. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
So Congress has been on recess and President Obama was on vacation last week, but all that changes next week, and Washington seems poised to focus on how to get Americans back to work. Mr. Obama is scheduled to deliver a major speech on jobs just after Labor Day, and Republicans are previewing their own plans. So for the next several days, Marketplace will be looking at what it will take to fix the employment problem. David Gura starts us off today with the big picture.
The unemployment rate's been around 9% for 2 years now. Over the last few months, things have improved a little bit. Companies have hired about 100,000 workers every month.
But we're getting better at such a slow pace that it doesn't feel like getting better.
That's Linda Barrington. She's a labor economist at Cornell University. Barrington says politicians, especially President Obama, need to explain to Americans why things are so bad. Then the president needs to suggest some solutions.
He needs to be out there more actively than he has been, arguing more persuasively that there is a role for the federal government here.
And that's going to be at the heart of this debate. On one side are economists who say we should spend more federal funds. Heather Boucher is chief economist at the Center for American Progress.
One of the smartest things that we could do right now, and certainly the number one thing that I would be looking for in this jobs package, is spending money on infrastructure.
To fix broken bridges and pave roads, projects that would need workers right away. Boucher says there's also a strong argument for reforming taxes, giving breaks to companies that invest in clean energy or hire new workers.
The point is to push those firms that are sort of on the margin of making that decision over the edge into actually hiring someone.
Republican plans center on spending cuts and the GOP's floating other ideas, nearly none of which involves federal spending. They want to push through trade deals and reform the corporate tax code.
With all of these, of course, the devil's in the details.
And we should get more details starting next week. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
The frenzy around the phone hacking scandal in the UK may have died down a bit, but the damage keeps compounding. The New York State Comptroller has rejected a $27 million contract with a company called Wireless Generation over concerns about its parent company, Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation. Now, $27 million is just a rounding error for a mega conglomerate like News Corp, but the decision suggests that fallout from what began as a newspaper scandal is seeping into other parts of the Murdoch empire. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott reports.
Wireless Generation had a deal to create a database of test scores and other information. It would be used to track student performance in New York public schools. But last week, the state controller nixed the deal over concerns about phone hacking and police bribery at News Corp in Britain. Analyst and investor Porter Bibb with MediaTek Capital Partners says all of News Corp is under a shadow.
I think it's just a matter of corporate culture. People pick up that kind of information and say, maybe we should just be a little more prudent and put this out to competitive bid.
Wireless Generation was acquired by News in December 2010. There's absolutely no reason for anyone to be connecting our company to that.
That's Joan Lebo, a Wireless Generation spokesperson. She says the company will try again. Losing the contract would put another damper on News Corp's push into the education technology business. Last fall, Rupert Murdoch hired former New York City schools chancellor Joel Klein to build that business. He's since been sidetracked leading the company's internal investigation into the hacking scandal. Porter Bibb says having to rebid for the school's contract is a minor setback.
This is not a big deal, but it's the tip of the iceberg.
Bibb says a bigger problem for the company is news the Justice Department is ramping up its investigation of News Corp's activities in the U.S. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
On Wall Street, investors peered at the minutes from the Fed's latest meeting and appreciated that there was at least a discussion of more stimulus for the economy. Stocks rose. We'll have details when we do the numbers. A new version of the Ultimate Driving Machine will make its debut on dealer lots across the country this fall. BMW says the sedan will have all the performance and styling you'd expect of a top luxury vehicle. But the engine? Four cylinders. Something that hasn't been seen on a BMW in this country for more than a decade. And BMW is not the only one paring down. As Marketplace's Elisa Roth tells us, a combination of consumer demand and government standards is driving the changes.
12 years ago, BMW stopped selling cars with four-cylinder engines in the U.S. because the company felt that to be seen as a true premium brand here, its vehicles needed at least six cylinders. But times have changed. American drivers and the American government are demanding better fuel efficiency. Tom Kowaleski is a spokesman for BMW North America. He says new technology has changed the relationship between cylinders and performance.
We gain more performance than we had with the corresponding six-cylinder engine that it replaces, but we do so with a 20% increase in fuel efficiency.
That's partly because smaller engines weigh less, so suspensions can be lighter too, and lighter cars are more fuel efficient. More and more car makers have been coming to the same conclusion. One of Ford's best-selling full-size pickups now runs on six cylinders instead of eight, and Hyundai has stopped offering a V6 version of the Sonata. Michael Robinette is a consultant at IHS Automotive. He says, keep in mind, these are global vehicles.
So
Offering a six-cylinder just for the United States doesn't make a lot of sense. We can offer a four-cylinder in all markets.
BMW says it will keep making those bigger engines, but it does plan to start offering four-cylinder engines in many more models. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace. After years of declining sales, one comic book publisher is hoping to attract new fans by doing the equivalent of spinning the earth in reverse in the land of superheroes. DC Comics is remaking its 52 titles with entirely new looks and storylines. And tomorrow it releases the first issue of the redesign. Our very own Lois Lane, also known as Marketplace's Jennifer Collins, has the story.
To get an idea of how dramatic this change is, DC Comics co-publisher Jim Lee says, just check out Superman.
The red briefs are gone.
After 70 years, someone finally told the Man of Steel they call it underwear for a reason. Batman, Wonder Woman, the Green Lantern, every one of the characters in DC's lineup is getting a makeover as well. And issues will begin at number one.
We want to make this generation of readers feel like this is their version of DC Comics. These aren't the characters or storylines that my parents or, you know, grandparents collected.
This takes guts.
Joe Field is the president of a trade association for comic retailers.
This is a hugely bold move that I haven't seen in my 25 years in the business.
Field says the industry could use a revival. Sales have fallen nearly 10% from peak revenue of more than $700 million. But for loyal readers, he says, the move could be kryptonite.
DC Comics has a lot of fans that really would be put off by a total starting over.
And Field says while TV shows and movies based on superheroes have brought in billions for Hollywood,
unfortunately, the studios don't have tags on the end of the movies that say, next step for you is to go into your local comic shop.
Dave Pfeiffer runs a local comic shop in Los Angeles called Secret Headquarters. It's no secret most of his customers are in their late 30s or 40s, and sales of comic books at stores like his have been declining steadily.
I think there's been kind of a lack of excitement, which is really hard to put a finger on because a lot of the comics are still so good.
They may be page-turners for older fans, but Pfeiffer says newer fans have trouble getting into often long and convoluted storylines. John Jackson Miller, who tracks the comic book industry, says there's one way to change that.
Whenever you put an issue number one on a cover, sales do go up dramatically.
Miller says a small relaunch in the 90s helped another comics publisher, Marvel, boost sales and eventually Hollywood's interest in the Iron Man series. Marvel has relaunched a few other titles as well. DC's move is much bigger. DC co-publisher Jim Lee hopes the top-to-bottom makeover will inject energy into some of his lesser-known characters.
Some of the ones I'm excited about are like Aquaman. You know, Aquaman has never had a great look, orange and green. It's probably not the most iconic color scheme out there. But we try to make him look a little more royal, powerful and epic, I guess.
DC's also planning aggressive releases of its comics digitally, and Lee expects sales to climb at least 15%. The trouble will be keeping those sales growing.
Ultimately, we have to show them really awesome storylines. No costume change is going to make a bad story a good story.
Now, if only they could come up with an answer for why no one recognizes Clark Kent without his glasses. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Coming up, the military is embracing alternative energy for reasons that have nothing to do with climate change.
Seriously, it's not an environmental thing. It's all about trying to help us accomplish the mission. We're not the reason why the environment sucks.
But first, let's do the numbers. Wall Street pulled itself out of an early dive, but then barely hung on to gains. The Dow rose 20 points, nearly 0.2% to close at 11,559. The NASDAQ added 14 points, 0.5% to finish at 2576. And the S&P 500 inched up 2 points, 0.25% to end the day at 1212. Those consumer confidence figures we told you about sent shares down at the start, but investors welcomed news that the Federal Reserve discussed economic stimulus options in their last meeting. Dollar General reported profit growth and raised its performance outlook for the year, sending its shares up nearly 6%. Barnes & Noble posted a quarterly loss, as expected, but it predicted that its Nook e-reader and e-book sales would double this year. Shares surged almost 15% higher. Bonds rose, the yield on the 10-year T-note slipped to 2.17%, and you are listening to Marketplace.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf, online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up Wednesday. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on wholesale inventories and sales for the month of July. The President's Council on Jobs and Competitiveness holds a meeting in Portland, Oregon. And if you want to keep your clothes clean, you'll stay far away from Buñol, Spain. La Tomatina, that annual tomato-throwing festival, happens tomorrow. It's a mess. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM, American Public Media. I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdal. Today's Wall Street Journal features a perfect example of what happens when reporters go digging, especially in places that haven't seen sunshine for decades. This time, they discovered new evidence of foreign companies cooperating with the Gaddafi government in Libya, supplying surveillance technology used to track dissidents. Margaret Coker is one of the reporters on this story, and she is with us now via Skype from Libya's capital city, Tripoli. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Much of the surveillance that you uncovered took place in, a dingy room there on the ground floor of a six-story building in Tripoli. Can you describe for us what you found?
Right. Colonel Gaddafi has ruled the country here with a interlocking web of different spy networks and agencies. I've been researching the firms that have been selling surveillance technology to Libya for a number of years now. And so I popped into this abandoned sort of spooky building with lots of hallways and unmarked doors. And lo and behold, I found the headquarters of the Internet Surveillance Network.
Well, so these companies that you talk about in the article, everything from a French technology firm, you mention a subsidiary of Boeing, a Chinese telecom company, we're really spanning the globe here, aren't we?
Right. Well, we can't blame Western technology firms here. There really are a lot of firms involved from all over the globe. And just to be clear, it does not appear that any of these companies broke any laws by selling to Libya. Libya has been removed from international sanctions list since 2006, and it's been a very lucrative partner for many multinational firms. Libyan activists knew that they were being monitored. They were trying to take precautions. Skype seems to be a very safe place for them. And at the days before the revolt kicked off here, Gaddafi's men were trying to monitor Skype. Naris, which is the Boeing subsidiary that sells a technology that is thought to be able to break the Skype encryption, they were involved in talks with Libyans, but they ultimately did not end up selling that technology to Libya.
Uh-huh. Tell me about the Eagle system, which was installed by the French technology firm Amisys. What did that help the Gaddafi government do?
That system is known as a deep packet inspection package that allows eavesdroppers or spies to be able to basically see your email traffic, also capture attachments that you have. So some of the files that I reviewed show things just like this. Two Libyans who are discussing an anti-Gaddafi video that makes fun of his hairdo, or a discussion between two people describing Gaddafi's son, Saif al-Islam, who tried to paint a portrait of himself as a great economic and political reformer. And some people just never bought that campaign. Mm. So you have these discussions that are being eavesdropped on, and then people being put on watch lists, and then either having to go underground to evade arrest or actually ending up getting arrested.
And I don't know if you would know the answer to this question, but is it possible that this surveillance that you found could be used to prosecute the government?
Well, these systems certainly do have very large memories attached to them. You know, they keep millions and millions of emails and phone calls within their servers. So if indeed the servers are still intact, of course, the records of this data can be brought back and used to build cases against the Gaddafi intelligence agencies.
Margaret Coker is a reporter with The Wall Street Journal. We've been speaking with her via Skype from Tripoli. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for sharing your article.
Thanks for giving me the time.
Yesterday, we reported on how the U.S. military is looking to loosen its dependence on oil because so many casualties arise from the need to maintain fuel supplies in combat zones. Today, in part two of our series on the military and oil, we look at how that effort is playing out with Marines who are using solar power in Afghanistan. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Scott Tong reports.
Ask a bunch of Marines if they're technology early adopters, and you get this. It does seem a bit off to be in Camp Pendleton, Southern California, talking solar power with Lance Corporals, like Jonathan Jacobson, 3rd Battalion, 5th Regiment, or India Company.
I got friends that are in the Army, Navy, and everything, and they even look at me like, holy shit, you're badass.
Here, VC stands for Victor Charlie. But India Company was voluntold, as they say here, to try out clean tech out in the valley. That would be Helmand Valley, Afghanistan.
We were all fairly skeptical up front. Honestly, I wasn't all that interested in testing equipment.
Company commander Jason Morris.
Because it's just another thing that somebody's throwing on us to test, and here we are going into a combat zone.
Where your radio is your lifeline. This is actual tape from Afghanistan.
If you can get directly overhead, it'd be much appreciated. Hey, we're taking fire from...
Typically, radios are powered by bulky military batteries, single use, which means Lance Corporal Joseph Hooper carries a lot.
That's 15 pounds right there on your back, along with all the extra gear, ammo, water, food.
From the north, and I'm gonna go.
There are always trade-offs, not guns or butter, but guns or batteries. On this last deployment, India Company packed reusable batteries, charged on the battlefield by mini solar panels. Jacobson says they fold out and they're about...
the size of a clipboard. There's a few wires that go with it. You can put it in like a small backpack and it doesn't really weigh at all.
So, did the solar gizmos pass the battlefield test?
It's something none of us were used to, but I mean, it actually started working really well.
It was nice to have. We always used them and it never went down on us.
We just set the solar charger out. We just set the batteries in there every time we needed to and just rotated batteries out.
Even at night. That thing works at night. It was unbelievable. We plugged it in, we're like, maybe it'll work. So we started putting batteries on there, and that moon came up, and it charged it.
India Company guinea-pigged three other devices, including solar generators and tarp covers. In fact, it went 3 whole weeks without needing any new batteries, creating more space to carry food, water, bullets. And it earned itself poster child status in the military PR machine. After all, energy efficiency saves on generators for electricity, which means fewer fuel convoys in harm's way. And it saves a lot of money. Fuel can cost $45 a gallon in Afghanistan when you add in transportation and protection costs. Now, here's the however.
Are we going to take a major dent out of the 200,000 gallons a day in Afghanistan that the Marine Corps burns? Probably small.
Colonel Bob Charette runs the Expeditionary Energy Office for the Marine Corps. Right now, he says he's in the startup phase of innovation.
It has been really like an entrepreneur shop. Or an early Starbucks, if you will. How do you make it enduring? You know, you have this good initial momentum. Now, how do you continue on the initial success?
There are doubters. For his part, Charette just keeps testing new technologies. He's already sending portable solar chargers to every battalion in Helmand Province. And like all innovation, it comes with surprises. These things, they don't just charge batteries. India Company Commander Morris.
It's amazing how quickly you get iPods starting to be recharged on these things.
iPods, DVD players, laptops for movies. Lance Corporal Jacobson.
When you just get to listen to like some favorite song from back home that's already old by now, it feels good to be able to just sit back and relax and just take your mind away like from that hellhole.
In fact, music played a pivotal role on the battlefield. Marines Taylor Wright and Terry Rittenhouse say their commanders often played Linkin Park before each risky patrol.
Throw on some rock music, everybody start getting their gear ready, start getting all pumped up and hyped and focused on what we had to go do.
Those are some of the last moments we got to spend with some of our guys. They became casualties on the patrol and didn't make it.
This battalion lost 25 men in 7 months, more than any other in the 10-year Afghan war. So when it comes to clean energy, the whole point is making them better fighters and lightening the battery load. As for the environment, Lance Corporal Joseph Hooper.
I mean, come on. Like, seriously, it's not an environmental thing. It's all about trying to help us accomplish the mission. Yeah. We're not the reason why the environment sucks. Cities like L.A.
In Camp Pendleton, Southern California, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And tomorrow, Scott looks at what the Pentagon's embrace of alternative energy means for businesses. And we want to hear your thoughts on this series. Check out our new widget, The Big Question, at marketplace.org.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
And this final note, the biggest bankruptcy in U.S. history may soon be history. Today, a judge granted approval for creditors of Lehman Brothers to vote on a $65 billion payback plan. Yes, it has been just shy of 3 years since the investment giant imploded, helping set off the financial crisis. And creditors are still working out who gets what from the scrapyard. Even if the plan gains approval later this fall, Lehman says payouts would not begin until, at the earliest, the first quarter of next year. And that is Marketplace from APM, American Public Media. Today, the Dow rose 20 points, nearly 0.2%. The Nasdaq added 14 points, 0.5%. And the S&P 500 inched up 2 points, 0.25%. Thanks to Ethan Lindsay and Jolie Podokas on our Morning Report crew. The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by Rod Abid. The Marketplace Morning Report is where you can turn for the latest and earliest in business and economic news. Next time on this show, part three of our series, how the military's seal of approval can mean millions for green tech startups.
People who are skeptical, you know, yeah, that's kind of a niche technology. It's not a niche technology anymore. Look at the Marines start to use it.
I'm Tess Vigeland. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.